Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or a smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. I need to update the links for international broadcasters. Please bear with me. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with France 24. After French voters rejected President Macron's Renaissance Party in the European Union parliamentary elections, he called for snap elections for the French Parliament. Last weekend, the first part of the election saw a stunning victory for the far-right party, the National Rally led by Marie Le Pen. This coming weekend, round 2 will take place, and many believe that the National Rally will control the French Parliament. To prevent this from happening, there are calls for 200 positions to be abandoned so as not to split the Liberal vote. Today's French stories are all press reviews in order from Monday through Thursday. The first 6 are about the French election. Then a press review about the far-right youth party in Italy. Finally, a press review about the first African-born member of the Bundestag, the German National Parliament, who is stepping down after serious racial threats to his life. France 24.
Well, investors may be nervous, but the newspapers are nervous as well, certainly the left-wing ones.
Well, this is from Aujourd'hui en France, or Le Parisien. This is, again, something you're seeing on a lot of the papers today. The far right at the doors of power, knocking on the doors of power. For Les Echos, the French business paper, it's the end of an era. The paper says, even though this is just the first round and there is still a second round that will decide the makeup, the lower house in parliament next week, the general feeling is that a lot of things have already kind of been a done deal. The paper evokes what it calls the end of an era for the presidential majority and for Emmanuel Macron as well in many ways. And La Croix, the Catholic paper, says the next week will be a decisive week. It's a week of choices, a warning that a new campaign in many ways is opened as of today, hoping, the paper says, to see a major disruption to prevent the far right from taking power.
And what about the reaction from outside of France as well, Dipti? What are the papers worldwide saying?
Well, a lot of reaction as well, Stuart. This is from Le Soir, the Belgian paper, which says that the far right is so close to power, it says on its front page, an historic result, unprecedented and devastating. The paper accuses Emmanuel Macron of having smashed to pieces France, while you have the Times of London, the British Daily here on its front page, which is going with humiliation. The French right have humiliated Emmanuel Macron with this resounding loss projections, albeit the Times of London saying the French have relegated his party to third place, while you have Tribune de Genève, that's a Swiss paper, again going with that word, humiliating, a humiliating loss for Emmanuel Macron and for his bet. The paper wondering also if French voters' desire for change will take precedence over their fear of change.
Quite a few reactions Dipti's found for us in the Italian press, notably.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got Libero, which is going with not Macron, but Micron, so macro, micro. So you get the play on words there. A headline that's quite evocative. I think it says it all, really. Evoking, indeed, what it calls a political earthquake that has hit France. Die Zeit, that's a German paper out of Hamburg. Now, in this article, they say that, I mean, Germany has also seen the rise of the far right, particularly in recent European elections. The paper says that the results in France show how the centrists can collapse and that this could also happen in Germany. The possibility of a far-right government, the paper says, could lead to authoritarianism, a racist domestic policy, as well as closer ties with Russia and Vladimir Putin.
Start with the French papers doubling down on their calls to block the national rally far-right candidates in Sunday's second round of voting, Dipti.
Yeah, that's right, Stuart. And three papers say it's a pure coincidence, but three of the left-leaning press today have the exact same headline. This is Libération, the left-leaning paper, which you see here. Their headline reads, Désiste, prouve que tu résistes. Same for L'Humanité, the communist paper, and also Les Jours, which is a left-wing news website. The message is clear. Third-place candidates should step down, irrespective of which party they are from, to allow the second-place candidates to have a better chance of winning against far-right candidates in first place in those runoff elections on Sunday. This is from Le Figaro, the right-wing newspaper lambasting Emmanuel Macron, but also the left-wing New Popular Front coalition for their alliances together, despite their enormous differences and in some cases even hostilities between the two. This is from Le Temps. This is a Swiss paper. Their editorial today says that French Republicans must not hesitate in their vote, reminding us that while the far right have done a lot to varnish their image, they are still, I quote, rooted in an ideology and a world vision that is fascist. French citizens will have a political responsibility to decide between essentially the worst of two bad options, the paper says, come Sunday. Same stance taken by the Financial Times, the British daily warning against the far-right surge in France, and says that the French opposition needs to mobilize to prevent Marine Le Pen's party from taking power, noting that the situation is not only bad for the French Republican values, but also for Europe as a whole.
We've seen more than 200 candidates now stand aside from the left and the centrist blocs as well in the hopes of blocking a far-right majority in Parliament. Will it work, though?
That's the question that Le Figaro has posed on its front page. The question is, you know, will voters apply? Will they enact on the instructions they're receiving from these candidates who stood aside? Le Figaro refers to these so-called orphans of the first round, those who voted someone through to the second round, who has now stood aside, instructing them to vote for someone else. The Figaro says there was a survey, their survey, several days before the first round, that said 51% of voters had no intention of taking orders on who to vote for in the second round. But then again, 84% of NFP, that's New Popular Front left-wing voters, would prefer to see a victory for the Macron camp than National Rally in power.
Now, from one far right to another, this is an undercover investigation. It's into the youth wing of Giorgio Meloni's Brothers of Italy party. It's shocking many. How's this story developing?
Yes, so this fan page production company led an investigation into the Melonian youth. Now, they are proud to say that they boast thousands of members and are one of the most powerful political youth movements in Italy. And this undercover investigator was able to film fascist chants, racist comments, Nazi slogans and praise for former fascist dictator Benito Mussolini. Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has had to respond to these findings, and she wrote a letter to her leaders within her own party saying no to those nostalgic for totalitarianism. That's what they've got on the front page of Il Giornale. And on La Repubblica, they've quoted her saying that her party has already come to terms with those racist and anti-Semitic parts of its history.
To Germany we're going. The first African-born MP in the Bundestag has announced his withdrawal from federal politics. Tell us more about this one.
Yes, this is the story of Karamba Diaby, who won't be running again for the Bundestag. He says that it's to spend more time with his family and make room for younger MPs. However, this comes on the back of a really shocking story about verbal and written abuse that he received on racial grounds. There was this, he posted on Instagram a few weeks ago, coming clean. He shared these screenshots of these extremely long, racist and graphically sadistic email he was sent with explicit references to the Holocaust. This article in The Guardian also talks about how his constituency office has been the target of attempted arson attacks. Bullets have been fired through his window. This piece in Der Spiegel has as the headline a quote from the letter he sent to his colleagues when he told them the news that he would be stepping back. And it says, Karamba Diaby considers the behaviour of the AfD in the Bundestag a fertile ground for violence. The AfD are, of course, the German far-right party, and he reflects on a shift in German politics since they entered the Bundestag in 2017 and suggests that this has really led to an unleashing of violent sentiment and racism.
Those press reviews were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. They are also available at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The Israeli military has given an evacuation order to about 250,000 Palestinians who are already displaced in the ruins in Gaza. The Netherlands has spent 7 months trying to put a new coalition government in place. It is strongly right-wing with the goals of limiting immigration and European environmental restrictions. An analysis of how this shift will affect life in the Netherlands, along with the possible coalitions between the various far-right parties within the European Union itself. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Now to the war in Gaza, and Israel's military has given an evacuation order affecting about 250,000 Palestinians and a third of the total area of the territory. The affected region includes much of the city of Khan Yunis, where many anticipate a large-scale Israeli ground assault against Hamas, which is considered a terror organization by multiple countries. A UN spokesperson said the evacuation will only heighten the suffering of civilians.
Israel's evacuation order leaves tens of thousands of Gazans facing a difficult decision. Where to next? The wrong move could have drastic, even deadly, consequences.
I took down my tents, all my belongings are in the street, and I don't know where to go. I don't know if anywhere safe where my children and I can go. They'll say an area is safe, but it turns out that it's not safe at all. We keep getting pushed from one area to another.
One group relocated from Khan Yunis to this house in Deir al-Balah, located in one of Israel's so-called safe zones for evacuees. But the next day, an Israeli airstrike hit the building, killing at least 12 people inside, including several children. Nine of the victims were from the same family. Israel's military did not immediately comment on the airstrike. But it's not the first time Palestinians have been killed by strikes in these safe zones. Other displaced Gazans have sought shelter in seemingly unlivable conditions, such as this open-air dump by the sea. When fighting cut off their route to the main dumps in eastern Gaza, municipal waste crews began bringing their loads here, near the tent camps. The risk of disease is high.
If we don't get sick, we'll die from the bombing. And if we don't die from the bombing, we'll die from the destruction and devastation.
The UN says nearly 2 million Gazans, 80% of the population, are displaced. And the new evacuation order suggests another assault on Khan Yunis might come soon.
Now to the Netherlands, and 7 months after elections there, the country finally has its new coalition government in place. The right-leaning coalition is seeking to implement several measures to limit immigration. The policies are not popular with everyone, and they put the country on a collision course with the broader policies of the European Union.
New Prime Minister Dick Schoof signing the royal decrees that officially put him in office. The man selected after 223 days of negotiations, unaffiliated with any of the parties. A sign of how many disagreements there are among the ruling coalition, which only came together when far-right Freedom Party leader Geert Wilders gave up his bid to become prime minister, despite the party winning the most votes. That coalition brings together the Freedom Party with the center-right People's Party for Freedom and Democracy, the populist Farmer-Citizen Movement, and the centrist New Social Contract Party. Their coalition agreement, titled Hope, Courage, and Pride, calls for strict measures on asylum seekers, scraps family reunification for refugees, seeks to reduce the number of international students studying in the country, and wants exemptions from EU environmental rules. Some of the new government's priorities clash with the European Union, another blow to the bloc, which has seen right-wing anti-EU governments take power in multiple member countries. The wild card is Geert Wilders, the Netherlands' longest-serving MP and leader of the far-right Freedom Party, which got the most votes. He selected hardliners from his party to the new cabinet. It's unclear how he'll affect the government, but he's a vocal and visible presence with wide public influence. There are obstacles, however. Even before the swearing-in, youth groups, including from two of the coalition parties, were already pushing to limit the new government's asylum plans. The government is expected to release detailed plans in September.
Our correspondent Jack Parrick has been covering this story and joins us now from Brussels. Jack, how much could the Netherlands change now that this anti-immigration government has taken office?
We know that they've got this coalition deal in place. They've said, Dick Schoof has said, that they will bring in the strictest ever immigration policy. They're basically going to turn the coalition deal that they've agreed between these four political factions into some kind of governing policy, some sort of governing outlook over the next few months. We expect by the end of the summer we'll have a clearer picture. Specifically, and what everyone will be looking at, is how they try to reduce immigration, which is this big concern, especially for Geert Wilders, a man who has been convicted of being Islamophobic, for instance, for some of his campaign rhetoric.
Now, all this puts the Netherlands at odds with the European Union in many ways. How could this impact European Union migration and asylum policy, Jack?
Just before the spring, we saw the European Union sign off finally managing to overhaul its asylum and refugee application process and how they do it. And the first thing that they changed was that the first country a migrant arrives in, they no longer, after this agreement, have to apply for asylum in that country. So the idea is that countries where people are arriving first, which is predominantly Greece and Italy, could share the burden and send people up into northern countries like the Netherlands, or those countries could choose to pay into the pot to protect those asylum seekers in other EU countries. What we expect from this new anti-immigration Dutch government is that they will refuse to accept people, but will probably fight back against the agreements to pay financially for other EU countries to support them.
Now, this right-wing government that's taking office in the Netherlands reflects a general trend within Europe. We saw that in the European parliamentary elections. Tell us a little more, Jack, about the way the far right is surging ahead at European Union level.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what's happening at the moment. The Netherlands, for instance, there's been on the fringes, Geert Wilders for decades has been sort of pushing for power, and now we're seeing that power actually come to fruition. Without him being prime minister, he was considered too far right for other Dutch coalition partners. But as you say, in France, there's now this chance of a potential for a far-right prime minister that would completely snarl up French politics, would greatly weaken Emmanuel Macron here in Brussels and in European Union spheres. But it's also about how these far-right politicians decide to sort of work together in the European Union. Geert Wilders and Marine Le Pen of the National Rally in France have had a long-standing friendship and allyship. So they're actually two big leaders that stand together, whereas a lot of the other far right leaders, and especially some of the sort of resurgent ones, like we see Giorgia Meloni in Italy, she tries to steer away from some of the other leaders. So the question is, how will they all form? And if they do, if they are able to form sort of agreements and groups within European politics, how will they be able to exercise that power going forward?
Jack, thank you very much. That was our correspondent, Jack Parrick, there in Brussels.
That report and interview were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, as well as most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. There's a link for online support available at outfarpress.com. Many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please keep it up. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The Washington Post ran an article claiming that China had set up listening stations in Cuba, as well as a Chinese spy base on the island. Cuba says it is disinformation. The Netherlands has summoned the Israeli ambassador over allegations of spying on members of the International Criminal Court. Israeli forces have killed over 8,500 students in Palestine, along with destroying hundreds of educational institutions in Gaza. The European Union has condemned an announcement by the Israeli finance minister to legalize 5 new outpost settlements in the occupied West Bank. Radio Havana, Cuba.
According to X, the Wall Street Journal, a U.S. newspaper focused on economic and business issues, persists in launching a campaign of intimidation related to Cuba. This Tuesday, the U.S. publication assured that, according to a report to which it had access, images captured from space show the growth of electronic listening stations in Cuba that are believed to be linked to China. It added that the photographs taken include new construction at a previously unreported site about 70 miles from the U.S. naval base of Guantanamo Bay. In June 2023, Fernandez de Cosío himself described as totally mendacious and unfounded information a publication in the same newspaper about an alleged military agreement between Cuba and China for the installation of a spy base. Then, in a statement, he stressed that these are fallacies promoted with the perfidious intention of justifying Washington's unprecedented tightening of the economic blockade against the Caribbean nation and destabilization campaigns. It is an attempt to deceive public opinion in the United States and the world, he remarked, adding that such slanders are often fabricated by U.S. officials.
The Netherlands has summoned the Israeli regime's ambassador to the country to explain allegations of Tel Aviv's spying on the International Criminal Court, the ICC, whose seat is in The Hague. Quote, Israeli ambassador has been asked to report to the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs in connection with the allegations, unquote, a spokesman for Dutch Foreign Minister Hanke Bruins Slot said. Quote, the Dutch government regards such activities as a form of undesirable foreign interference and considers it totally undesirable, the ministry said. As the host state of the ICC, the Netherlands is obliged under an agreement with the court to protect the safety and security of the ICC staff and ensure that the tribunal is, quote, free from interference of any kind. The allegations involving the Israeli regime have blamed it for carrying out a decade-long war of espionage against the ICC by intercepting phone calls, messages, emails, and documents pertaining to the court's officials. Yossi Cohen has threatened Fatou Bensouda, a chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, the ICC. The targeted officials have included Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan and his predecessor Fatou Bensouda. Khan announced last month that he had applied for arrest warrants for Israeli officials, including Prime Minister Netanyahu and Minister for Military Affairs Yoav Gallant, for crimes against humanity in the Gaza Strip. The move by Khan came amidst an October present war by the regime against the Palestinian territory. At least 37,765 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have died as a result of the brutal military onslaught that began following a retaliatory operation carried out by Gaza's resistance groups. Israel has killed more than 8,570 Palestinian students in the besieged Gaza Strip since October, the report says. The Zionist regime has also killed 100 pupils in the occupied West Bank ever since. The Wafa News Agency, citing the Palestinian Educational Ministry, reported on Tuesday that over 490 teachers and administrators were also killed, and more than 3,400 wounded in Gaza and in the West Bank. Hundreds of educational institutions, including 65 run by the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, the UNRWA, were also bombed and vandalized. Experts have labeled the trend scholasticide. Al-Aqsa University, established in 1955, was the oldest governmental higher education in Gaza until Israel damaged and destroyed its campuses in Gaza City and Khan Yunis. It was one of the largest universities in Gaza, offering bachelor's degrees and postgraduate studies across applied sciences, arts, media, sports, finance, and IT. In January, a series of videos shared on social media showed the gateway to the Khan Yunis campus partially collapsed. The next month, reports emerged that two of the Gaza City campus buildings had been shelled and Israeli soldiers were shooting at civilians sheltering there. Similar damage has been reported in the remaining 12 accredited universities in Gaza. Youssef Salam is a legal researcher at the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, an independent non-profit organization based in Geneva. He said, quote, "It's clear from the beginning of this military operation that the Israeli army had a plan to strategically strike all educational facilities. Schools and universities and homes are categorized as civilian locations by international law, and they are prohibited from being targeted. The student death toll is thought to be much higher due to communications and mobility issues along the strip and the thousands of people who remain missing or unaccounted for." The European Union has condemned the announcement by Israeli Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich to legalize 5 outposts in the occupied West Bank as another deliberate attempt to undermine peace efforts. In a statement, an EU spokesperson noted that the bloc's leaders had a meeting this week and condemned the Israeli government's decision to further expand illegal settlements and urged it to reverse them. Quote, "In line with the long-standing common position and the UN Security Council resolutions, the EU will not recognize changes to the 1967 borders unless agreed to by the parties," it said. The EU said the steps taken by Israel to weaken the PA, the Palestinian Authority, must stop, and it urged it to release withheld tax and customs revenues owed to the PA, quote, "and to take the necessary measures to ensure that corresponding banking services between Israeli and Palestinian banks remains in place."
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, though there's no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, and all times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You will have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury and staying in a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.